Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Rogue Startups. Today, I am flying solo, no Craig, but instead I have a very interesting guest. I'd like to welcome Chase Diamond to the podcast, an email marketing guru. Chase, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. I'm glad you were able to join us here today. So I invited Chase on the podcast here because he's working on something that I think would be very relevant to all of our listeners, talking about his journey here. But before we kind of get into that, Chase, would you mind giving us a little bit of background on yourself and what you've been up to?
Absolutely. So I'm a partner at an e-commerce marketing agency. So we've got about four or five divisions, everything from email to SMS to paid search and paid social, et cetera. We're a team of about 100 people across six different countries. So most of our team is here in the US. We've got people in Canada, Mexico, the Philippines, and India. And we're serving and kind of working with right around 130, 140 e-commerce brands. So all of our brands sell direct to consumer. All of them sell online. Some of them do have retail footprint, and they all do anywhere from seven to nine figures. So partner at an agency, working with a lot of cool brands, email is really my bread and butter. And then outside of that, you know, I run newsletters, courses, events, and most recently, a software business. So that's kind of the high level of what I've been working on.
Very cool. And I can say with authority that your newsletter is 100% legit. I believe you market it as the most engaged subscriber email marketing newsletter on the internet here. And I would say that that is 100% true.
Thank you. Thank you.
I haven't seen your stats, and I know you post some of those things when you put things on the emails there. But I mean, usually when your emails show up, like the content is just off the hook. I mean, you always put a ton of effort into all of those letters. And I certainly really appreciate it because I learn a lot reading that as a fellow email marketing nerd there. And I find little tidbits that I can share with stores on Recapture and so on and so forth. So yeah, thanks for putting that together.
Yeah, appreciate it. I've sent every single Monday now for north of 2 years. And I think we'll probably talk about it at some point later, but it's really been a great way for me to connect with potential SaaS users, clients, friends, podcasters, et cetera. So would love to share at some point later kind of some of the value that I've gotten out of it. Although, you know, the goal really is to provide value to other people.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we're both in email marketing. So, you know, the value is always about building that audience and then, you know, connecting with them, providing that value, and then, you know, making your ask. So, I would like to hear today about your new journey here that you're working on in your SaaS. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And at the time of recording this, I actually have not shared the name of this platform with anyone. So I'm going to be kind of sharing it with you for the first time. You know, I have had a few people in the alpha, but outside of them, I actually haven't even shared the name of it. So the name of the platform is EmailUp. And one story we can talk about later if you want to or not is I actually acquired the .com before I was planning on just rock and rolling with the .co or the .io or, you know, I bought the .net. I bought basically every single ending except for the .com. And then I was like, shoot, I might as well acquire this .com before I launch or else I'm probably going to get, you know, asked for a higher price and have less negotiation. So the platform is called EmailUp. And essentially what it is if you think about like a Canva, you know, multi-billion dollar company Canva allows people to create different image assets. I'm basically building Canva, but specifically for email. So the issue that I've faced is a couple things. One is at my agency, we have a team of about 10 or 15 designers, and finding new designers has been really challenging. We build everything from scratch. You know, everything typically is built in Figma. Then it's either custom coded or sliced and diced and then built into the ESP of choice. And it's just a really kind of labor intensive process. It's expensive. It's time consuming. It's really hard to scale. So that was kind of one reason and kind of one thing that I was leaning towards and trying to figure out. The second was in most of the ESPs, the design builders, the email builders themselves aren't really that great, to be honest, right? I don't know the best way to explain other than they're a little bit limited. They're not super advanced. They're not super great and extensive. And I think most of the reason is, right, ESPs typically focus on things like segmentation and automation and campaigns and deliverability, right? The things that sure. you really want deliverability to be strong and whatnot, ESPs to focus on. So I think email design has often been kind of an afterthought for ESPs, and therefore it's been challenging for, you know, marketers without a design background or copywriters without a design background to do it themselves. So long-winded, I really wanted to build this platform that was a best-in-class email design platform. It, platform agnostic, it will work with any single ESP out there, either through a direct import in some cases, or through just the ability to export the HTML and then upload that file or upload that text to the ESP of choice. So long-winded, I wanted to scratch our own itch at our agency and allow our team to be able to do more with less. And then the reason being is the ESPs have not focused on it. So that's kind of the long answer.
Well, that's super cool. And, you know, speaking as an ESP, you know, it's kind of a tough thing to actually design an email editor that really meets everybody's needs, right? And certainly in Recapture, we've kind of focused on two modes. And one was we got the WYSIWYG editor, which is like for the most basic tech phobic users, if you will, that really just struggle to put things in place, and they want sort of a quick drag and drop way to make an email and make it look, you know, reasonable. And then there's the, okay, well, you've got the advanced users, but the really the best and only thing that I can do there, aside from doing what you did here, which is, as we're about to find out, a hell of a lot of work, is to basically just go straight up custom HTML and be like, all right, you can do whatever you want, but it's all on you. And that's tough, right?
Yeah. And I think I'm solving for like that middle to beginner group, right? I think the folks that understand HTML aren't the folks that I'm building for, aren't really the folks that you cater to, right? Most of the folks that do HTML typically work at large agencies or large companies. So I'm really focused on like the small to medium sized players. You know, a one-off freelancer, you know, a brand with 3 employees, you know, an agency with 10 or 20 clients, right? Where, you know, every dollar counts, resources are hard to come by. You want to be able to do more with less, especially kind of with the world that we're going in today, right? If you can kind of do more with less, you're going to be in the driver's seat. So I'm really trying to solve for how do I allow, you know, a beginner email marketer, a copywriter, an account manager, a junior designer, someone that's not super design heavy or someone that's not super technical, to create a really beautifully designed email that renders properly across different inboxes and devices in a matter of minutes, right? How do you create an email and get it sent out so that way you can send more emails? So the thesis that we're really trying to solve for and build around is how do we get people to send more emails and better emails? Because if they send more emails and better emails, they're going to make more money. And therefore, the usage of our platform increases, which means we make more money and we all make more money as a result.
Right, right. Yeah, that better emails part is definitely, I think, a big struggle, especially for freelancers that have limited resources there. So that's really sweet. I'm glad that you're putting out the Canva of email here. I'm actually quite interested in talking about some integration here with Recapture, because I think that would actually be useful. But, you know, moving on from that, what would you say has been one of the most challenging things about building this here that you kind of got surprised by?
Oh man, there's so many. My mind's racing with all these. I think one is part of the limitations is my own capabilities and my own bandwidth. So what do I mean by that? One is, as I kind of alluded to at the beginning, right? I'm a partner at an agency of all these other things. So the amount of time that I could spend on this is limited, right? And then two, my own expertise in building SaaS and kind of the back end and the technical capabilities is also limited, right? So non-technical founder, you know, trying to figure out something that's fairly technical, right? I wouldn't say it's as hard as building an ESP because there's obviously more moving pieces and parts, but it's probably one of the more challenging things that I could have decided to build. And in hindsight, probably should have built, you know, smaller, cheaper things first, got some users, got some traction, then built this, but I guess go big or go home. So the two main things were, again, my non-technical background and my limitation of time, where I'm building this as a side project, where this very much should not be a side project, right? This should be like a full-fledged business that dedicates the whole time. I think that's one and two. And with that, I think I had very unrealistic expectations. you know, developers, people I partnered with, kind of were telling me the things I wanted to hear of, yeah, no problem. We can launch this in 3 months at $20,000. Like, that's not a big deal. That's what you want. That's what we'll do, right? You know, we're like 8-10 months later, you know, mid high five figures, almost six figures into this thing between the domain and kind of the dev, right? So I didn't realize how long this was going to take and how expensive this was going to be. And I kept making promises on social. I kept making promises to people that this thing was ready and this thing was going to be live. And then I would go on and we'd fix one thing and it would break another. And I'm like, well, shoot, like, can we just patch this up real quick? And then when we go to patch that up, so there's another leaky bucket and hole. And then it's like, oh man, I don't actually like how this turned out. I envisioned it one way, turned out another way. So I also think part of me being very perfectionistic about it and also tying a lot of like my self-worth and kind of reputation into this, like, has really kind of delayed things and wanted me to get slightly further along than probably just an MVP that makes sense to launch.
Yeah. Oh man. My heart is pounding in my chest right now with all of the anxiety that I'm feeling from all of those things that I've experienced as well over the years. And oh man, my heart goes out to you. I know that's tough, especially being a non-technical founder. So how did you solve for that in order to make sure that you got the right team and that they understood your vision and that they built it, you know, to your specification? Like, I know that's a big challenge for a lot of other non-tech founders in our audience and something that, you know, as a tech founder, they're like, oh, well, I can just build it. It doesn't matter. But when you don't have that capability, you can't pull that lever. I think there's a higher level of anxiety that goes with it because you're kind of depending on somebody else to get it right. And you're just hoping for the best in many cases because it's hard to vet for that. So how did you do it?
Yeah, I'm still figuring this out is the honest answer, but a couple of things. One is, you know, I'm like a stick figure designer. I'm not very good at design. So I'm really scratching, again, my own itch, my team's itch. So some of this was like realizing that I needed to be like crystal clear. So, you know, I bought a whiteboard and I literally would draw on paper or I would use something like a Miro or like a Figma and just have like very basic explanations and also have looms accompanying it of like being very clear of what I wanted. So I realized too that like, I can't just blame developers and designers, you know, for my shortcomings. So I made sure that in every future interaction with new devs or the existing devs or the current team members, that it was overly thorough, that I very clearly illustrated what I want. So that way we didn't waste 2 or 4 days building something that they thought I wanted that couldn't be further from it. So I think one is learning to be a better communicator and communicating in a way that developers and designers understand, not necessarily marketers. I'm so used to working with and talking to and talking about marketers to marketers so they get it, right? We're speaking the same language, but I realized I was probably speaking English and someone else was understanding it in Spanish or whatever language. So one of it was on me. Two is I found a design dev shop out of Canada. And essentially what I did is I have them on kind of, I guess, a retainer, and also they have skin in the game now. So I've incentivized them by having equity in the project. So that way, you know, in theory, they should care more. And I also have a reduced rate of what I'm paying. So I brought on, instead of looking for like a single individual, I brought on a team and I've kind of vetted them and saw the projects that they had worked on, asked for references. So long-winded, it's me getting better at communicating exactly what I want, showing examples of how other people are doing it, maybe in other industries, you know, making videos, literally drawing it on paper and sending screenshots, walking them through it, being very thorough. And then finding a team that had skin in the game that felt like this was theirs as much as it was mine.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, that's tough. And I think that's a really creative way to solve it. I think you're one of the few I've heard who's straight up offered equity in the project up front. So I'll be interested to see on the back end what your growth looks like, because I think that will definitely tell you whether that strategy paid off or not.
Yeah, it definitely will be. You know, I still own, you know, 90% of the business. So, you know, I own still like an overwhelming majority. And it was a great way because they've provided a lot of value. So I really see them being long-term good partners. But yeah, I guess the jury is out. We will see. We might have to do a follow-up episode in a couple months or a couple years.
I would like that very much. Okay, so you weren't a technical founder. So that was a disadvantage in some circles, because I just got back from MicroConf, and one of the stats that they threw out at MicroConf this year was that of all the various people that have gone through the Tiny Seed bootstrap funding and all of the people that have gone through MicroConf, they found that there's like this huge imbalance. So there's like 90% are technical and 10% are non-technical. So you fall into that 10% there. Yep. But I think you have different advantages because you're non-technical. So what were some of those unfair advantages that you had when you decided to make this product and make this leap?
Yeah, I think that's two primary things. I think one is industry expertise, and two is audience or distribution. So, you know, I've been in email marketing myself 8 to 10 years, right? On different things from cold email to opt-in email to newsletters and, you know, communities. Run an agency, right, where we're working with well over 100 brands. You know, we got a 70 or so people specifically on our email and SMS team, and, you know, the remaining 30 people across different divisions. So we're working with north of 100 brands that do 7 to 9 figures, have worked with hundreds of brands in the past. So, you know, I understand our challenges as an agency, and I also understand the challenges of brands. Why do brands work with agencies? Because they don't have the internal resources. Oftentimes they've got someone that maybe was marketing, doing Facebook ads, but they don't understand email. Or more often than not, maybe they have a designer that's never designed for email, or a copywriter that's never, you know, designed for email. So design is just this really common issue for all things email marketing. Doesn't matter what size business you are or aren't in most cases. It doesn't matter what platform that you're doing. It's very much a universal thing. So I think really understanding how design fits into the email process and where there's kind of bottlenecks and where there's barriers and really who I'm building and solving for, I think is one huge advantage. I think the second advantage is, you know, I've built my personal brand literally on the back of being like the email marketing guy for e-commerce. So I'm building literally the e-commerce design platform by the email marketing guy. So, you know, I have the newsletter, as we talked about earlier, got about like 30,000 people on that. You know, across social, I've got about 100,000 followers, you know, podcasts, YouTube channel. So I've got a really strong network and list and audience that have built a lot of trust through courses and free content and services of, you know, 5 to 6 figures. And all these people have been really supportive. So I put a tweet out a couple of months back saying, hey, I need a few alpha users. And, you know, within a couple of minutes, I had to delete it because I had like 5 or 10 people reach out to me and wasn't ready for more. You know, the other day I posted a tweet on Twitter and it literally was up for 2 minutes because I said, hey, I need 3 people to hop on this demo call with me, you know, tomorrow. And I had like 5 people DM me within 2 minutes. So I think my real advantages come towards getting feedback, being able to iterate, understanding the process, and being able to then distribute it.
Distribution is so huge. I think that's the one thing that I know one of my main struggles is trying to find a unique distribution channel or have that audience. And I've seen that before with other founders and other projects that I've worked on, getting your message out there, having that distribution channel, and especially in your case, owning that distribution channel. So you don't have to worry about somebody else taking it away from you. Your email list is yours. So, I mean, that's a true advantage there. That's amazing.
Thank you. And yeah, one other thing to add is a couple of months back, I had some, you know, hypotheses and thesis of like, who are users, where and whatnot, but I put out a survey. So I threw up a survey, I think on like Twitter, maybe on LinkedIn, I can't remember, but you know, one or two platforms. And I had about 150 to 200 people fill out that survey, you know, pretty quickly. And some of the things that I was asking them so I could understand like who our customers were was like, well, what email marketing platform are you using, right? So, you know, I got all the usual suspects on there and I was able to see like, okay, so when I prioritize like the ability to import our templates into another platform or export our templates into another platform, what are the top three that I want to prioritize? One of the interesting things in building the product that I didn't realize was because we're exporting HTML, we have to have obviously the unsubscribe link in that file before we, you know, upload it elsewhere or directly import elsewhere. And every ESP has a slightly different way that they use the unsubscribe, right? Some is just like lowercase unsubscribe, some is uppercase unsubscribe link. So every ESP has a slightly different variance in the way that they associate their unsubscribe. So then I wanted to figure out, okay, like we can't have an unsubscribe link custom for every single ESP in the world. Like what are the 5 or 10 that we prioritize? So now we have a custom button in the platform that's a block for people to select kind of one of the top 5 or 10 main ESPs in e-commerce based off what data I've collected. I also was asking people, you know, what is your process done like today? You know, how do you use this? Are you using the ESP's native things? Are you using a third-party tool like a Canva or Figma? How are you building this? You know, what is your role? Because I think the way that people use this platform might vary based off role. where I think, you know, if you're a designer, I think some of the advanced feature sets we have are going to be a lot more relevant to you than someone that's a little bit more beginner. You know, the beginners are going to be building mainly from templates that we have, which is kind of some of the learnings. So a lot of the research that I've done is A, my hypotheses, which again, a lot of industry expertise, but B, like I almost am just defaulting to whatever these surveys say, because the data is really powerful and it doesn't matter necessarily what I think. It matters obviously what the users think. So that was really helpful too, just to get, you know, 150, 200 people give feedback on all these different ways in which they build emails.
Yeah, that's amazing. That was actually one of my next questions was, how did you actually go about trying to find like product market fit here? So you did the surveys. Did you do anything else? Because obviously you started with your own pain from this, right? Your own agency had this massive need to actually have easier, faster design that took less time. So what else did you do besides those things? Was there anything else or was that it and you're off to the races?
No, it's a couple of things. So yeah, own internal struggle. I'm also friends through kind of the courses that I made with a lot of other agencies and brands and whatnot. So a lot of requests for content I receive of, hey, can you interview someone on your YouTube series coming up that does email design? Or hey, in a future newsletter, would you mind doing something on email design? So just by being a content creator in this space, I got a lot of inbound of, hey, would you do this video or would you do that video? And you know, a lot of the content revolved around design. So yeah, inbound, my own agency, talking with other agencies through the courses I've created around like, hey, well, how did you guys design this email? And what do you guys use? And then outside of that, it was just kind of building in public. I'm a huge proponent of building in public. Sometimes it gets you in trouble, right? Because I promised that this was going to be out weeks and months ago. And I thought that promise was obviously going to be something that we're going to do. And again, I was very transparent. I had to like issue like a statement basically saying like, hey guys, I was totally wrong. This is my first time building SaaS. I thought it was going to be this date. It's just not ready. And I'm just truthfully embarrassed. So I had to kind of retract a few things, but building in public for the most part has been really beneficial to sharing things that I'm building or thinking about building and getting feedback in real time, whether it's through literally like a native poll on Twitter. You know, I might get hundreds of people responding to something pretty quickly. So for me, it took different shapes and forms, one-on-one calls, my own experience, taking polls on social media. And then I've been working kind of with like a small, like limited group of alpha users to give feedback and, you know, oh man, guys, this is glitching on my end and this is breaking on my end. And I'm making people actually record themselves on Loom trying to build an email. So, you know, Dave, maybe you have a template for your business. I might say, hey, we're going to build this template for Dave's business. I'm going to provide like the logo, the text, the image, whatever assets they need in a folder. And I just want to watch you recording your screen, talking out loud about how you build this. And it was crazy. Like that exercise alone of just watching people build an email without giving them any instructions and not letting them play with it was actually probably some of the biggest like light bulb moments, because I realized like, oh, wow. In my mind, this is so intuitive, but it's intuitive because I've built it and I've been playing with it for weeks and months. But for someone that's new and hasn't spent time with it, I was able to see like the three or four things that people were getting wrong consistently and able to kind of build and solve for those.
Wow. I mean, you've done more product market fit validation in your pre-launch thing than I think most SaaSes do in their first 5 years of being around. I mean, that's some pretty intense stuff. Like the deep customer interviews, the UX testing, like that's a that one is one that I'm still working with on Recapture. I keep hearing from a lot of people that, oh yeah, it's really easy to use. But you know, we hired a new QA person this year. And she's given me a laundry list of, oh, this isn't very easy to use. And I didn't know what to do after this. Like she had the perfect fresh eyes. And so, you know, we're taking advantage of that. But that kind of feedback, that information is like, it's the rarest and most precious form of feedback that you can possibly get from your users. So that's amazing that you're getting it up front before you've even pushed it out the door. Like that to me is probably accelerated your overall customer experience several years into the future here, because that stuff is really hard.
Yeah, appreciate that. And it's funny. So yesterday we did a call with some of the alpha users. So we had some learnings from that too, where like we had done most of the ones one-on-one, and then we did a small group yesterday of like 4 to 5 people. I had like the devs on and whatnot. And we literally went module by module, block by block of every single thing within the builder. And I think at this point we have like 16 or 17 blocks, and that's everything from like a logo block to a call to action block to an image block, you know, an unsubscribe block, et cetera. We literally went through every single block and ask people, you know, what are your thoughts about this? You know, what are your thoughts about that? And then we had other questions of like, hey, you know, how important is it for us to make sure that within this specific block that we allow you to leverage dynamic variables and personalization? Or, you know, how important is it for us to have presets, you know, preset block options for call to action buttons that have different shapes and sizes and colors? So we literally went block by block. We spent an hour on a call with about four or five alpha users yesterday. I think I need to buy them all dinner after that, but it was great just being able to go through and get that much feedback in real time. And just everyone on that call was different. We had someone that does a $2 million a year in the e-com business, someone that's a freelancer, someone that has a small agency, someone that has a big agency. So it's also been really helpful to get like diverse groups, because those are our three customers, right? Agencies, brands, and freelancers. And within it, it's going to run the gamut between someone that's about to start a business because of our platform and other people that have been scaling their business and going to be able to continue scaling because of our business.
Yeah. I think a long-term challenge for your SaaS moving forward here is going to be able to manage those three personas in parallel and still be equally valuable if you're going to try to, you know, keep them all as customers somewhere in your SaaS pipeline, right? Because those are three very different use cases and three different ways that people are probably going to use it. So my guess is this is the start, not the end of that feedback. And you're going to have some interesting conversations moving forward as you get more and more feedback. Because once you let the floodgates open, everybody's going to come and you're going to have a whole bunch of, oh, what if it did this? And I wished it could do this. And yeah, so it'd be interesting to see how much of that you've stabbed off up front and really caught the core 80% and how much is just going to be a complete surprise when everybody shows up. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question. And again, like, yeah, how do you prioritize three different groups of people and, you know, different people are getting different things. Like part of my worry is on the agency side. Like for us, you know, we have 100 clients. Depending on how I price this, like this might be really expensive for an agency with that many clients that like I almost price myself out of it, where maybe it's better for individuals and brands or small agencies that, you know, can afford to pay, you know, the $50 to $100 per month per client. But so I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. Like, how do you solve for pricing? And most of our pricing is going to be based off of usage, which I think is probably the right way to go about with something like this. Because our ultimate goal, right, is to get you to be able to send more emails. So in theory, the more that you make, the more that you should be able to pay for something like this and the more that you'd want to pay. So I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. There's definitely a lot of things I'm sure we're going to have to fix.
Yeah. And pricing is such a challenge. Just trying to figure out what really resonates with your customers and fits with how they're using the tool and what they really want to get out of it and the value that gets provided and whether it's ongoing or one time and all of those sorts of things. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if your pricing model changes here in the next 6 to 12 months. It could very well indeed. That's sort of a critical time when it gets into the hands of that mass adopting user base. So
yeah, it's interesting because like when you think about like the email design process, there's so many people involved in it, especially at our agency, right? Like every client that we work with gets access to five people. They have a marketer, a copywriter, a designer, an account manager, and a developer, right? So if you think about like what we pay, you know, for an email to get done and what we charge and like what other people are paying, like, you know, we pay people, you know, salaries. So it's a little bit different, but I mean, it's not uncommon for brands or agencies or freelancers that are using contractors to be paying, you know, $50 for an email design, all the way up to like hundreds of dollars per email design. So kind of out the gates, like we're thinking of pricing at $49, $79, and $99. And you get, you know, kind of like 5 emails, 10 emails, and 15 emails respectively. So, you know, on the 5 emails for $50, you're basically paying $10 per email design. So if anything, my hunch is that we might have the ability over time to raise pricing for kind of new people, probably grandfather people into the existing pricing. So I'm kind of starting at like that threshold of like, how do I just get a bunch of usage, get a bunch of users, get a bunch of feedback, and then build out really rich kind of feature sets, whether that's like AMP, accelerated mobile pages that allow emails to interact like landing pages, things like solving for dark mode, right? You know, you have obviously the normal emails and you've got people have dark mode on. So there's all these other things that, you know, countdown timers that I want to build into our platform that I think once I have those, you know, for anyone net new, you know, that was paying $49, you know, they're going to probably have to be paying $79 or $99 is kind of the base, but everyone will get grandfathered in. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about it right now is like, how do people currently pay and get their emails done? You know, are they paying more? Are they paying less? Is this solution easier, better, and cheaper? Okay, yes. Cool. We'll probably have to raise prices in the future potentially.
Yep. Yeah, I can't wait to see what that looks like here in the next 6 months, because I'm sure you're going to be learning a lot here in the very near future about that. So we've talked about some of the stuff that was really challenging or difficult here. Was there stuff that you were like, oh man, this is going to be a real slog, and now you're like, wait a minute, that was super easy?
That's a good question. So one of the things that we were adding kind of more recently is like the ability to integrate with like Shopify. So people can dynamically pull product from like their Shopify store. I thought that was going to be like an absolute nightmare. And it hasn't been easy, but it's been comparatively easier than I thought it was going to be. I thought that was going to be like a whole massive ordeal and issue. And we're mostly through that. So like, again, there still might be things that come up that I retract this statement, but yeah, that integration with Shopify, allowing people to bring in products and the price and the names and all those types of things from their Shopify store directly into our platform, I thought was going to be just an absolute nightmare. And it's been a little bit easier than I thought. Again, I'm not the one doing it, so I guess it all is easy, but it also takes a lot of time. So in that case, it's hard. So that's kind of been the one that stands out.
That's interesting. Yeah. Our experience in integrating with various platforms has been that Shopify's API was the most comprehensive, the easiest to do, and the best documented. And everybody else falls short in one or more of those three areas. And in some cases, all of those three areas. Yeah. But yeah, so it, just a fair warning, if you're going to start going cross-platform on this and looking for the others, be prepared for some challenges there that you weren't expecting.
Man, maybe I'm just going to have to just absolutely storm through the Shopify marketplace first, and then we'll worry about it later.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly the one I would have addressed first, going after that same kind of a tool there. It makes the most sense with the market penetration that they have.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So, all right, you've been building this now for almost a year. It practically makes you a SaaS expert at this point. As soon as the day you launch, you will become a SaaS expert. So I'll come back to you and I'll refer to you as Chase Diamond SaaS expert. But if you had to give somebody else advice about things that you wish you knew before you started your SaaS, but regret not knowing earlier, what would that be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a couple of things. I think one that kind of I've been toying back and forth with, not for this one, but for any net new SaaS businesses, I kind of just ponder for fun on marketplaces like FlipUp, MicroAcquire, et cetera. It's like, what's like the actual cost? Like, what are the hard costs and what are the opportunity costs of building versus buying, right? Like, can I buy something that's done or mainly done? Maybe it doesn't have much revenue, but like, can I buy something that I want or close to what I want that's done or mainly done for maybe the same money, slightly more, or hopefully obviously even less, but it's going to save me the time. Like if I could have bought something that was similar to this or like this, a year ago, and it could have been live when I had the idea and wanted to start building this, like, man, that would have saved me a lot of stress and anxiety and money and, just chaos. And at this point, right, I would imagine I'd have a business doing 5 or 6 figure MRR, right? So that's one I think about often. It's like, I have a great grandiose plan in the future. If I want to roll up different email platforms, mostly outside of ESPs. So whether that's countdown timers or email design tools or copywriting tools or pop-up tools. And I don't think that I'm going to want to build those from scratch, right? I think I'm going to want to acquire something. So I think that's one. Two is, I think, being more realistic with the time frame it was going to take, and maybe be a little bit less anxious to hit send and tweet and whatnot on when something was launching. Like I probably should have been launched, but not told anyone I was launched and said it was going to be coming in a few weeks, knowing that it was done, and kind of start hyping it that way versus saying, hey, it's going to be a few weeks out, and in reality, it's a few months out. So I think also too, like building in public and being excited, but not like jumping the gun. I think those are like the two big things that I think about. Like, how do you fast track your growth? Can you buy something or acquire something or even partner with something in a meaningful way? And then two, having a little bit more realistic expectations and adding padding to deadlines. So that way you and your team and kind of the market are all kind of in alignment.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. The acquisition, you get a lot of things when you buy something else. That was the reason I bought Recapture. you basically are buying something where somebody else has gone and done the product market fit piece. They've actually established some level of an audience, hopefully more than zero. And you've got a little bit of revenue to play with there. And then you sort of have to figure out, well, what can I do to boost this? Whether that's, you know, promote it to my own audience, move it to other platforms, add features that they're not capable of doing, whatever that is. So yeah, it's a very, it's a challenging decision either way. And there are definitely pluses and minuses. Speaking to somebody on the other side of that, you know, there's stuff that you wish that you could have done after you bought it. You're like, oh, I wouldn't have done it this way. I would have done it this entirely different way. But now you have to put the effort in to change it. And that's something you could have done if you built it from scratch, right? The grass is always greener.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's like, part of what I'm thinking about is like, how do I find like tools as they launch, start using them as a user, being on that side of the experience? And then if it's something really good and great, like how do I inquire about, you know, investing or acquiring that specific tool, right? Obviously, like a lot of the tools that I use today, the big ESPs, the big platforms, the Canvas, the Figmas of the world, like, you know, I can't buy them, right? Like there's no way, like I don't have those kind of pockets and no investor is going to give me money to go buy something like that. But like, how do I find things early that are good and that I get to use? And like, okay, like for someone to exit early or to bring me on early before they're too big is mutually beneficial for both of us. So yeah, I don't know. I've been thinking about this a lot. And my old hobby used to be looking at Redfin every single day, even though I'm not planning on moving or nor do I want to move. Now my new hobby is like just scouring MicroAcquire, Flippa, and the other exchanges every night, just out of curiosity, like what people are building and what are the multiples and how big is their team and how profitable are they? So that's kind of become like a weird thing as I've entered into this SaaS world of just like, I've become obsessed with like understanding like what's out there.
Yeah, you and I share the same weird hobby, actually. I get all the MicroAcquire emails. I've signed up for everything at all the various tiers so I can just see what's the landscape look like for the new stuff, the moderately grown stuff, and the bigger stuff, just to kind of get that feel for the multiples, the teams, the tech stacks, the verticals that they're going against, what things that they're trying to build, why they're selling, just all kinds of crazy data that's associated with that. It is fascinating, but I agree. It is a weird hobby. You and my wife would get along very well. She used to do the Redfin Zillow thing all the time, even when we weren't planning to move. So
I don't know what it is. I love learning. I think that's the core of it. Like I think through building this process, through building the agency, I just love learning. And I just love like things that people have built and I appreciate it and I'm fascinated with it. So I don't know. I like data. So with the real estate stuff, I was always curious on like houses that are for sale now. Like what were, like how long ago did someone buy? I just make up scenarios and play games in my head of like, oh wow, this person bought it like a year ago and they already flipped it for $1 million extra. Like this is wild. Like, I don't know. It's just really interesting to see on the business and the asset side.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story here with us today, Chase. If folks want to learn more or dig into your story further, or even sign up for your newsletter, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, great question. I actually have one other thing that came to mind that I'd love to briefly talk about.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. So last week I had this idea. So, you know, I'm starting to think about the launch, right? And I just have this thought that like most people nowadays, they don't want to follow brands on social media. Most people want to follow personalities and individuals. But I also saw a buddy that made this account on Twitter and he had grown it pretty quickly. He'd grown like to like 5,000 or 6,000 people in 2 weeks. And he basically built this account that was like best ad of the day. And I hit him up. I'm like, dude, you inspired me. You did such a great job. I'm going to do something similar, but I'm going to do best email of the day. So I literally made this Twitter account on Thursday night, I think it was. And we're now, you know, a few days out from that. So it's been maybe like 4 or 5 days since. And I'm just sharing pretty much one email that's in my inbox. I think it's interesting. I'm sharing what kind of email it is, the subject line, the preview text, what time they sent it, who the brand is, what email platform they're using, and where it landed. And this account, again, not huge. It's only been 4 or 5 days. It already has almost 1,400 followers. So it has like 13 something followers. So almost 1,400 followers, and it's been a few days. And instead of now building like the email up Twitter and Instagram, I'm just going to start building out this community of like the daily email. And I think that could actually grow bigger and live outside of this, but be a great promoter of the platform. So just a random thought I had is as you think about like building SaaS or as you have SaaS, like maybe build a community versus just a brand page. I think more people want to fall out and be involved in communities and individuals than they do brands necessarily. So that was kind of my last thought I just was thinking about.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And it's funny, I had no idea that you were the email of today guy.
Oh,
I signed up for that. I did.
Oh, cool.
And it wasn't even through a retweet of you, because I, you know, I've been following your account on Twitter and we've had conversations on there many times, but I just saw this pop up in my feed and I was like, oh, that looks cool. Like, I'm interested in that. And I just signed up for it. I had no idea you were the guy behind it, but now it makes total sense. And yeah, by the way, I love it so far.
Thank you. Yeah. So I think it's interesting. I don't know. I have like this thought, like I want my own growth team, like for my Chase Diamond brands. I want my own growth team. Like I would love to be building three of those accounts, one for copywriting, one for design, one for, I don't know, segmentation. Like I want to build a bunch of these communities. And obviously, right, like time is a precious resource and I don't have a lot of it being so spread thin. But yeah, I'm really curious to see too, and that could be a future conversation we have, is like, how does that simple Twitter account grow, or maybe it doesn't grow, and how does it generate revenue versus the time spent, and maybe how it doesn't. So kind of just an interesting last thought I had.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah, no, that's some cool stuff. And now I've got more stuff to look forward to here in the future. So if you want people to reach out and contact you, what would be the best way then?
Yeah, let's just do my personal Twitter. So my personal Twitter is ecomchasediamond. So there's no A in diamond. It's just D-I-M-O-N-D. And also, if you do want to check out that account that you started following that I built, the handle is email of today. So the title of it is email of the day, but the actual handle itself where you'll find it is email of today. So those are the two.
Great. We'll definitely put those in the show notes as well as a link to be able to sign up for your newsletter, which I do agree is a very valuable thing if you are in email marketing. And even if you're not like hardcore into email marketing, I'd still recommend Chase's newsletter because it really gives you some good strategies that you can follow for your own stuff. Even if you're outside of e-commerce, it could be SaaS related. And I still think you would get value out of that newsletter. So thanks again for coming today, Chase. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Sure. And if you want to continue the conversation, have a question for us, hit us up, podcast@roguestartups.com. If you have a minute, we would love it if you would share this podcast with someone you think would benefit from it. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.